It is currently about 8 minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock, and our guest today in the studio is Martha Thummel. She happens to be the president of the Port Austin Historical Society. They got some events coming up, and they've got their building, and they've got all kinds of things that on a day like this would be a perfect day to go out and see what they have to offer out there. You can't really do much at the lake, and even a little farm tour is a little soggy, but it's high and dry inside the building, and I'm sure they'd be glad to show you what the history of Port Austin's all about. I'd like to thank you for being with us today, Martha.
Well, thank you very much for having us today. We appreciate the opportunity to tell people about the History Center and what we're doing in Port Austin.
Give us a little bit on the center itself. You are just outside of town on Point of Arcs Road.
Yes, we're at 1424 Point of Arcs Road, about a mile and a half east of the downtown stop. There's stop signs now. It was a stoplight, but east of the stop signs.
So it's not when you turn on M25 to go to the east. You go right into the town, main light by the marina, and then you make the turn.
Yes, make the right near Heinz Hardware, yes.
And you don't want to send people halfway to Port Hope before they figure out that this isn't the right road.
That's right.
Now, your building used to be right in town as a landmark.
The building used to be right downtown. It was called the Civic Center. It was actually built to be the Temple of Maccabees in 1909. Served many purposes for the community throughout the years. Most recently, it was the Civic Center. And when the community got a grant to put up that beautiful visitor center, the village asked the Historical Society if we would like the building. And, of course, we accepted it because of the history of it, and it's a nice, large building for us and would serve our purposes. And so we moved it in September 2009.
And that was one of the problems at its location. It was a nice big building, and that's right where you wanted to see the lake. So they were kind of hoping to preserve it somehow, but get it out of that location.
Right. And when we moved it out there and started to renovate it, we found what a wonderful representation it was of the area. We took up a tile floor and a subfloor and found the original maple floor, had that refinished, and it's beautiful. Took out the drop ceiling, found the original ceiling, washed it. So when people come in and they first see the building itself, they're impressed on what we have to start with.
It survived the move pretty good because I sometimes wonder with the old buildings and, you know, plaster and stuff tends to not fare well to be jostled around.
Well, it was a building built in 1909, so it was built with a very good, strong material to start with.
2x4s were 2x4s back then.
Yes, they were good and strong. Yes, the buildings survived it very well.
Well, terrific. And there's plenty of room for you there? You find that you've got enough room for display with that size of the
building? Yes, we have a very nice display room, a large display room. I think it's about 30 by 50. Plus, we have an office area, two large restrooms, a large storage room in the back, which used to be the stage area. We have some extended storage in the area in the back, which we need because we do have more donations than we're able to display at any one time.
Is that how you relied on getting your displays at this point, pretty much? Is people in the community wanting to preserve the history of their own community?
Yes, everything's been donated. Our first people that organized the History Center back in 1997, Chris Clancy, started the organization. And since that time, they had the dream, of course, to have their own building. And they planned on having the building, so they went ahead and started organizing and collecting things. So when we opened the building, we knew that there were closet full, room full. Dave Thummel had a barn full of items that could be brought over and be used in setting up our first displays.
So the original work was just keeping a good paper trail where everything was, so when you had a building, you can get it all back.
Yes, we needed to know where they were.
And what types of things will people see there? I know the county building used to have that nice model of the air base right there at Port Austin. That was in the county building for years, and they've presented it back to the people of Port Austin up there to as part of their history.
Yes, we were able to get that. Margaret Behrens from Port Austin, her son-in-law, built that along with another gentleman from the air base, and she suggested that we ask for it, and the county was very agreeable to let us take that up to Port Austin and have it on display.
That was a big part of Port Austin for many years. That brought in the military money and kind of put you on the map.
It certainly did. At one time, there were 300 men stationed at the air base. And not only did they do things for the national government, the federal government, but they also supported our own community in many ways, in our school, in our churches, and broom ball at the Winter Carnival.
Yeah, that had to be a hard loss when they pulled out, because that's a lot of people for a town to lose in one swell,
yes,
brand exit.
It was a big adjustment, but we knew it was going to happen, so we did have time to adjust to it.
And it really was just the technology changed. We didn't need as much radars around to do the coverage. When they got better radars, and they found ours wasn't needed.
Right, it wasn't needed. Thankfully, the people who did purchase it have turned it into part of its recreation facility. There is an RV park up there, so it's serving the community in that way.
Well, they had to keep the airmen occupied, and when it wasn't nice to go to the beach, so they had bowling alleys and all kinds of stuff there to keep them going.
Right.
But what other things do you have out there? Do you have, like, people who have donated, you know, old photos of what happened through the years, or is it more physical things?
We have a number of paper items. A gentleman, John Varney from Port Crescent, left us a wonderful big box of information about Port Crescent. He ended up being a poet, and he was published in many papers, and he loved to put down information. So we have from him drawings of Port Crescent, drawings of the individual buildings, drawings of the maps of the community, and he wrote down stories of the individual people, and so we have a wonderful collection of things for Port Crescent. We had students...
Before we go on...
Sure.
People, you know, Port Crescent is what it used to be called before it became Port Austin, or is
separate... Port Crescent is one of our communities.
It's one of the communities around it.
Yes,
oh, okay.
It used to be 4 miles west of Port Austin. Our society is called the Port Austin Area Historical Society. So we include not only just Port Austin, but we include Port Crescent area, the Grindstone area, and the farming area in the area.
Okay, because you don't see it on a map anymore, and I was just wondering where it was.
It was a big lumbering town at one time. After about 1880, 1890, people started moving out, and some of the buildings were moved out. There are buildings, of course, in Pennypog that came out of Port Crescent. There's a church in Kindy that came out of Port Crescent, a couple houses in Port Austin. One of our members is working on a booklet called Where Have All the Houses Gone? And so that's one of the things that we're researching and hope to have a display and a booklet in the future.
And it's a tribute to the people that they've taken care of it and it's still there.
Yes.
Because a lot of things get lost through time and you never get them back.
Yes.
So you've got those types of things. We had the Great Fire. I assume you have stuff on that because nobody, I think, in Huron County was spared.
We had a student last summer from Olivet College who was an intern, and she did a display on the Great Fire of 1881, and she pulled together information that we had on hand, some booklets and books, and did a large display with a map showing where the destruction was. 4 counties were involved, Lapeer, Tuscola, Sanilac, and Huron County. 250 people died, and millions of dollars worth of damage was done.
And that was a lot in that day.
Yes, it was.
I mean, we think today of $1 million damage, you know, that's somebody's mansion in Hollywood. But we're talking towns gone.
Right, and what was most important at that time, it was September, and so the crops were lost, the gardens were lost, and the people didn't have things to get through the winter. It became actually the first relief effort for the American Red Cross. Clara Barton, who started the American Red Cross, was in Washington, D.C. at the time, trying to get Congress to recognize the American Red Cross. And she had someone come into the Thumb area to see what had happened here, and he reported back to her, and she raised money in the East, Connecticut, New York, and they brought items into Cass City and distributed them to the 4-county area, and that became the first relief effort. And we show that story, tell that story in the History Center.
It's a dubious distinction. You wish you didn't have it,
right,
but it was good that it was finally there when it was needed for us.
Right.
And Port Austin, I assume, because it's a port, it was one of the first type of communities in the area, as opposed to inland ones. Because
right.
Because you were doing your lumbering inward
right.
from
port,
the shore.
Mm-hmm. Port Austin started, of course, as a lumbering because of Bird Creek coming out to the shore.
There was enough water to float the logs down.
At that time, apparently, there was enough water to float the logs down. And Mr. Bird, I believe, was the first gentleman who built a sawmill at the foot of the Bird Creek. And, of course, then the ships needed to come in to get the lumber, so they built docks. And then eventually they drilled wells and had salt wells and shipped out salt. And then Captain Pier came into Grindstone about 1840s, and discovered the value of grindstone. And they built docks and shipped grindstone all over the world. But it wasn't until the railroads that the interior developed.
And building docks back then was kind of a risky venture. You didn't have the harbor of refuge you have today to shield it. I imagine storms played their toll on the docks and you had to keep rebuilding them.
Right. I thought it was interesting the way they built the docks. They would use 2x4s out of logs. They would build the logs up and make a crib from the log in the wintertime on the ice. Fill it with stone, and then in the spring, the ice would melt, and that crib would drop down into the water, and then they would build up on from that.
And again, people are probably, their jaws dropping. You could build a whole big thing like that on the ice?
Yes,
because
yes.
We don't seem to get the cold we used to get in the winters, but maybe that'll cycle around again.
Yes.
But interesting. And all this stuff, this is stuff you've learned through working with all these history materials and things.
Yes, well, we have a lot of information that people have collected. One of the first projects that the Historical Society did was to put together a book. It's called Life Along the Shoreline. Chris Clancy, Mrs. Kennedy worked on that. I'm sure many other people worked on that book. It's maybe 300 pages, but it tells the history of Port Austin. They used the notes from Tony Fisher, who had wanted to write a book about Port Austin, and he had gathered a great deal of information. And then families from the area contributed information. So that first book is a very good foundation for anyone wanting to learn about Port Austin area and the history of the area.
Does it make it difficult that much of the history we can garner is memories, which, you know, it's one thing to have it in documents and written down, but memories can be, you know, we have a way of, you know, the good old days type of things. And my folks would do that, and they're talking Depression years. And I'm like, those were the good old days, huh? But we have a tendency to do that. And is it difficult to make sure that what you're getting is facts? Do you find that you get it from several different people, and then it seems to gel?
Well, we find that we do have documented information that is facts. But what people enjoy perhaps the most is the stories that people have to tell. And we have a committee that is interviewing people. And it's delightful to have someone tell stories that perhaps have been enlivened a little bit, added to a little bit over the years. But those are the stories that people enjoy telling. Chris Clancy's brother was in the other day, and he was telling stories about the past and about how, he said, you have to remember, when people first came to Port Austin, they came from other countries, and some of them spoke German, some of them spoke Polish. They couldn't communicate with each other, let alone being able to communicate with other people in English. And he told some just wonderful stories about how people had difficulty in communicating with one another. I asked him if we could set him down and interview him, but he wasn't too sure about that. But it is the memories, but it's also the stories that people enjoy hearing.
Do you try to document them? Do you record them physically? Do you take notes? Or because it seems like sometimes the best stories are from the people who know how to tell them.
We have recorded 12 different interviews with people from the Port Austin area. And one of them was Mrs. Kennedy. They interviewed her last June. Unfortunately, she passed away in July. But she was sitting in the living room, and they were doing this interview with her, and she was giggling and telling stories, and her hands were flying around telling the stories and having such a good time. And now as you look back and see that interview, it just brings life to that time period that she was telling us about. And so that we want to be able to do, at least 6 interviews a year is our goal. And try to get this down. And as I say, the stories are as important as the documents.
You think we might lose some of that with the next generation because people just don't tell stories like they used to. They put it on Facebook. You know what I mean? There was an art form to that because you didn't have TV. You didn't have all this. And, you know, you got together with other people and you chatted. And you learned to do it right.
Yes, I think that's so. I think I see parents bringing their children into the History Center, and I think they want their children to get a taste of what it used to be like before. Do they call them DVDs or whatever it is that the children are playing with nowadays? And in the History Center, we have some games. We call it the History Center because we want it to be an activity center. It's not a museum. The word museum seems to sound like something you come and look at old things. And we hope that we're much more than that. The History Center is a place to come and do things. We have checkers. We have old fetch games, old canasta games. We have puzzles that people can sit down and enjoy some time visiting while they're doing a puzzle. So we would hope our activities are an important part of what we're trying to do.
Mm-hmm. we keep going and we get off track. You were going over some of the exhibits you had here.
Yes, yes. The activities are as important to us as the exhibits. The reunion committee in Port Austin has loaned to us all of these senior photos from 1939 through 1979. And anyone who comes in who has a history in Port Austin often stops there. And even if they're not looking for their own class, they're looking for someone they remember. And they enjoy telling stories back and forth about seeing someone that they remember. And we have the school sports trophies also from Port Austin going back to the 1930s.
Back when it was Port Austin
school. When it was the Port Austin school, yes. Yes. In fact, we're getting the school bell. That's a project we're working on this summer. Larry Horetsky is chairman of that committee. And the school bell from the old Port Austin school, the one that sat downtown next to the gymnasium, and then sat out on a concrete block in front of the brick school south of town, is now at North Huron, and we've asked for it, and they're going to let us take that up to the museum, and that will be moved this fall.
Another piece coming home. And other things you have going on?
We have information about the merchants and businesses, some of the old things. We have a display from the Lakeside Motel, which burnt in 1963. Many people come in, they see that name, and they remember roller skating at the Lakeside. We have information about St. Michael's. We have a First Communion dress that Genevieve Parks wore in 1931. We have information about Grindstone City, of course. Some of that information at Grindstone City is going to be moved into the Copeland House, which is the house we're moving this fall from Grindstone. It was where Aurelia Copeland was born in 1904. She's a lady that had a dream of making that house into a museum someday. And we understand, and we're still trying to document her life, but we understand that she became a famous opera singer in San Francisco. And she left it in her will that if that house came back up for sale someday, that it would be purchased. And it was purchased in the 80s with her will, something from her will. And her grandnieces are now giving that home to the Port Austin Area History Center.
Did they keep a lot of things intact on the inside? I mean, sometimes you get the house and then you got to try and hunt to track down some of the original furnishings or like furnishings. Is it still kind of original inside that you won't have a lot to do that way? Or?
There are some furnishings inside. There's a sofa and a couple beds, and the kitchen is, we believe the kitchen was probably done in the 1940s or 1950s. We're going to decide on a time period, maybe 1910, maybe 1920, certainly a time period when the Cleveland Stone Company was still in business, that we will do the whole home in that time period.
Would they have had electricity then, or are you going to have to go to lanterns?
There was electricity in the house now, but if we go back to the 1920s, we might set it up with the lanterns.
Or electrified lanterns, or, so that it's a little safer.
Yes,
yes. You want to preserve, and you don't want the soot and the stuff to ruin your
displays. Yes, we are serving the public. We do need to be careful how we do things. Yes.
Terrific. Yes. That's just one of, you've got property out there. You're looking at other things to bring there as well. I understand you've got a barn coming.
Yes, we have 10 acres where we're at. We have at least from the Port Austin Area Sewer and Water Authority, 99 years at $2 a year. Real tough negotiating there. But we are also going
to get them down to one?
Yes, we couldn't get them down to one. We were trying, but we certainly appreciate that we do have that for 99 years, so we can make plans and not worry about what will happen when we're not able to work on it anymore ourselves, that it's going to be there for the next couple generations. But we do have the Levine Barn. It's about 4 miles from the History Center. It's been donated to us by Tim Jendereski. His mother was born there. And the barn, we believe, was built maybe in the 1880s. It's a log barn.
And it's fully logged?
I mean, all log. It's an all...
Like a log cabin type of barn? Or is it just it, a...
It's a barn made out of logs. Oh, okay. And served the purpose for the Levine family. And we have a log setter. That's what he does for a living. He takes apart buildings and puts them back together again.
That's got to be a specialty to find.
Yes, he's from Indian River. We tried to find someone locally to do the work. We had people look at the idea of moving it, but it would probably fall apart if you tried to move it. So it needs to be completely dismantled and put back together again. And we had found a man up in Indian River who came down and took a look at it, gave us a proposal, and he's going to come next August and September, completely take it apart, bring it over to the History Center, and rebuild it.
Well, I imagine that'll allow it to be preserved a lot longer than wherever it was now, because when he takes it apart, he'll be able to see if there's any rot or anything that, you know, needs a little attention.
Yes, it'll be in better condition when he gets done. And when he finishes with it, our local contractor is going to put a cedar shank roof on it.
And then you're going to have to look for items that would be in a barn of that vintage to try and decorate it out?
We have some items from that time period already that will be able to be in the barn. It's not going to be a real big barn. We think it's going to be 16 by 24, maybe 16 by 28 when it's completed. But we also picture putting a rail fence around and maybe adding other small buildings to it. The general area, it'll be the beginning of our farmstead. We'll be able to have a corn crib, perhaps, a smokehouse.
Probably a loo, because the kids don't know what those things are
today.
Well,
the Copeland House needs a loo, so that's going to be interesting.
Because you have to put a sign on it, non-functional.
Yes. We are considering the dangers of putting that there.
Because kids today don't know anything. They don't even know about black and white television, let alone no indoor plumbing.
Right.
I remember going up to my aunt's house up north near Alpena, no indoor plumbing. I mean, that was the way it was. It's like, my gosh, took them a long time just to get a bathroom.
There are actually, people tell us that at one time period, maybe just at the time that bathrooms were beginning to be put into houses, that some people didn't think it was right to have a bathroom in the house, that they thought the bathroom should be outside.
Well, there were sanitary concerns and people, equated diseases and stuff, and I think they wanted to keep that out of the house until they had proof it wasn't going to be a problem. You came today, though, because you've got some events coming up, and we're already at the bottom of the hour here, so we want to make sure we start talking about the events you have coming up. You've got events coming up with some authors in the near future, next couple of weeks, that are going to be around to talk about their works and
yes,
be in the area.
Our first author nights is going to be this Friday on August the 2nd. We have the Huron Area Writers Group from Pigeon are going to come and share with us how they support each other, how to go about starting a book. Many people who are interested in history kind of maybe have in the back of their mind they'd like to write a book. Well, how do you go about it? So this will be an opportunity to visit with these people and have them give some ideas.
With the internet, publishing isn't quite as much of a problem as it was in the past. You had to have somebody who thought I could sell these things. Whereas today, you can post it on the internet, too, and have a book out that way.
Yes, it is possible to be self-published nowadays.
Which makes it a little easier, especially for books that might have a more of a limited scope where people are interested in it, where you wouldn't have to print 50,000 of them.
Right, and we would like to point out to people that perhaps you should at least put together a book or a booklet about your family, share it with your family. Share it with the future generations. Put down some of those stories that you're hearing about your family nowadays and save them for the future.
The one tip I have for people, go through all your pictures and write on the back who they are. My folks passed away. We had boxes of pictures, and 80% of these people, we didn't know who they were. And I'm sure they were relatives who had passed away before I was even born. And what do you do?
Right. Now you don't have the history of that.
It's gone. It's there in front of you, but it's a blank.
Another lady in our group is putting together a booklet. She said, I'm not sure what my children will do with the things in my house when I'm gone, but she said, I want them to know what they are. So she's taking pictures of the small things, the memento things that she has, who gave them to her, the history of the items, and putting them in a notebook. And so her children will at least know what she has before they make decisions of what to do with them in the future.
And sometimes the sentimental significance is a lot more than the intrinsic value or the physical beauty of something.
Yes, I believe it is. On August the 9th, we also have Allison Stein coming. She's going to be our guest that evening. And Allison is only 13 years old, and she lives in the Midland area, and she has already had a book published. It's called Summer Sensations. It's a book of poetry, and we're very pleased to have her come, and we're hoping to be able to have some young people from the area come and to share with her the work that she has done to know how about having something published and the importance of being able to put your ideas down on paper and developing them.
I think it's great that a 13-year-old already feels that she's got something to share that, permanently like that.
Of course, her mother has been published, so I think that probably helps. But she could share with us, and we can learn from that.
But there are kids who don't want to follow in their parents' footsteps, and it's remarkable that at 13 years old you're published and you can come up and speak to people about this.
Yes, it is a good that she is there to speak up in front of a group of people. That's a good experience for her, and we'll enjoy that. On Friday, August the 16th, we have Tom Glide from Harbor Beach, who is going to come. His father, Jack Glide, was a prisoner during World War II, and his dad didn't talk about the war much. Jack didn't share much with his children. But when he died, his children found a whole bunch of journals and booklets and things under his bed telling the stories. So Tom has written this book to honor his father and to honor his father's memory, and we're looking forward to that.
And these are all going to be held at the center?
They'll all be at the History Center at 7 o'clock. There is no charge. We do take up a donation and share that with the author. And the author will be there to sell their books, and they will also autograph their books.
Terrific. We've also got a silent auction coming up. That's a fundraiser, I assume.
Yes, one of our major fundraisers this year is the silent auction we're going to hold on August the 24th. This is something that the Friends Promoting Port Austin has done the last few years, and they have turned this over to us. It's going to start at 9 o'clock on August the 24th out in front of the gymnasium next to the farmer's market. So we hope to have people from the farmer's market come along and learn how to do a silent auction. And we have over 200 items, gift baskets and individual items, and certificates for people to bid on. We also have a committee working on desserts and beverages. We have a handmade bedspread raffle that will be going that day. And we're bringing some of the items from our gift shop in to have on hand for a little gift shop boutique. In the afternoon between 2 and 4, the Spring Street Boys are going to be playing music out front.
Oh, you just got a whole day's worth of entertainment out there, and come for the market, stay for the center.
That's what we hope will happen. Yes, we got a lot of real nice things already that have come in. We have McDonald's Food and Family have given us a money tree. We have items from the North Star Bank, Bayport Bank. Henry Ford Museum has given us $96 worth of tickets. Lake Street Manor has given us a getaway weekend for three couples. Some of our individual members are giving us baskets. They're having fun deciding on a theme and putting together something. Judy Binkley has put together a tea for her and a tea for him basket. T-E-A for her and T-E-E for him, meaning golf. So they're having fun choosing a theme and putting together a basket.
There are couples I know who would fight over who got which. That goes without comment further.
Yes. Mary Barnes is giving 3 dozen cookies a month for a year, so that will be a very special treat. We're hoping to get some Tiger baseball tickets, that we have some people that live in our area. And one great thing about Port Austin is we have a variety of people, and they're very generous to contribute and share with us. So we're looking forward to having some Tiger baseball tickets. Some of the other items we have art items from, we have the Thumb Area Arts Guild in Port Austin area, and they're very generous in sharing with us some of their items as well.
So a lot to go through, and silent auction. You don't have to sit there and listen to blah, 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 blah. There's a whole different thing. You bid and you can enjoy the market or whatever else. Come back and see if you won.
That's right. You just pick up a registration card and you can get a number, and you go up to the item that you want. You write down your number next to how much you're willing to bid for it, and do check back once in a while.
Well,
somebody
might
outbid you.
You've got to stay
right
on top of that.
That's
and,
right.
and the people learn that, you know, if it's done at 11 o'clock,
maybe
then you get back there at 10:58 and make sure you got the biggest bid.
Right. So I've been to these silent auctions, and sometimes you might have two or three people standing there with their pencil waiting to put that last bid down.
Waiting for that bell to ring that the hour is done.
That's right. We have 12 different rounds. There's 12 different times that the auctions will be closing. They start at 10 in the morning, run every half hour until 4 o'clock.
So there's different things each hour, so you don't think you see it all the first time. There'll be stuff later in the day that'll be totally different and maybe just what you're looking for.
We're mixing it up, so there's a real variety throughout the day.
Terrific. Now, I also understand that you've got a historic home tour coming up. Yeah, that'll be in September. It's more after the summer tourist rush, but a lot of people locally like to see some of these historic homes up close and personal.
We very much appreciate the fact that people from Point of Barks are going to have a home tour. They're going to tour 6 homes in Point of Barks on Sunday, September the 15th from 2 to 5 p.m. They've chosen 6 homes. They will be hosted by the homeowner who will share information about that home, the history of the home. All the homes go back to prior to 1900 and are all very rich in history. And the last home, I'm sure many people, when they think about Point of Barks, they think about Turnip Rock. And when I was working with Jane Nelson, who first put together this project, I told her that, yes, people are very interested in the homes, but I said the first thing people ask about when you mention Point of Barks is Turnip Rock. And so the last home that we are touring, the Andrews home, Turnip Rock is right out in front of their home. So we will be able to walk by Turnip Rock on the land side.
And these people are very generous to just allow people to go through their homes. I mean, they're nice homes.
Yes, they're absolutely beautiful homes. And we have 200 tickets for sale, so looking to have 200 people come through your home on a Sunday afternoon is a very generous donation.
Especially when you don't know what the weather is going to be and all the other things, but people are willing to do what they can to help.
Yes,
they
are.
And that's terrific. And do the people need to get the tickets in advance?
Yes.
Do they need to contact you? Is there a website they can get information on? All these types of things. People tend to use the web today, and if you have something that has a list of when all these things are happening, might help them too.
We have a web page. They can go to the PortAustinHistoryCenter.com. We're also on Facebook. If they're interested in getting the tickets, we're open every day through August from 10 to 4. The tickets are $25 each. We have 200 tickets limited, and we already have 100 of them spoken for. So I would suggest if people are interested, they make their plans for that day.
Quite a demand.
Yes. Well, people are, they know that it's very gracious of Point of Barks to have something special like this and jump at the chance to do so.
And a lot of people, if you don't know someone in there, it's a gated community. It's you don't get back there that often. And so it's just nice to see what is back there.
Right. And many people from the Port Austin area know history. They will come in and talk about Point of Barks, and they know somebody who worked down there, had contact with somebody from there. And so to be able to actually go in and tour the homes will be something special.
And these homes, these large, beautiful homes, were built because that's where the railroad ended from Detroit. It came straight up to that area, and people would come up and spend their weekends here.
Yes, people would come up very often. The family would come and spend the summer. The husband would come a few times during the summer to stay also.
Because it was cooler than living in the city before air conditioning and all the rest of
right.
things that go on down there, and pollution was bad in those days and everything else. It was nice to get to a place that we seem to take for granted. Beautiful and fresh air. Mm-hmm. If people are interested in becoming part of the Port Austin Historical Society, are you looking for members? Do you need people to do things? Have you found that you've got enough, or are you always looking for more people with more ideas?
Well, we'd love to have more people join us. Well, we have membership. We have a $10 basic membership, and then we have other categories, $20 for business, $50 for support, $100 donator, $500 and $1,000. We have had people who are $1,000 members. Very much appreciate the support of each one, whether it's $10 or $1,000. And we do ask our members to participate. We have a wide variety of things that people can do at the History Center. We have paperwork that needs to be done. We appreciate anyone that has computer skills. At the History Center, we have a computer program called Pass Perfect, which is used in large museums. And we're very pleased to have that. When someone donates something to us, we put together information about their donation, about the gift itself. We put it into the computer, and we tell the computer where it's being stored. And if we put it on a display, then we tell the computer where it's at. So anyone who comes in and asks about an item, we're able to tell them where it's at and how it's being used.
And imagine it also keeps the history of it. You know where it's been, how often you've displayed it, you know, if people are really enjoying it or if they don't go by that one as much as some of the others. It's all geared to making the experience being there better.
Right. And Pass Perfect also helps us keep track of memberships, how active a member is, what kinds of things members are interested in. When we want to ask a member to please participate in something, it always helps to ask them for something in an area that they're interested in. We have a gentleman who's doing some repair work for us right now, who's a retired industrial engineer. So we're really pleased to have his help right now. We have ladies who are putting together newspaper clippings. We have a very large 50-year collection of newspaper clippings. So that's a project. Our senior photos need to be covered. We cover them with a process called encapsulating. So it protects the photos over. It's the best thing that we can do to protect the photos, but it is a process that does take time to do.
That's one of the sad things is how much has been lost because things weren't protected or they were in in things that were acidic and destroyed them or diminished them or discolored them. I mean, there's a lot of restoration work and a lot of work just preserving things in their current state so they don't get any worse.
Right. Cleaning items, repairing items, those things are all important to be able to have good-looking displays. Designing a display, if someone has something in mind, an idea that they have, we would very much be interested in working with them on developing a display for the History Center.
So something for everybody, pretty much, who
yes.
has any kind of talents. How much time do you think people really need to put in to get something out of it? If you know what I mean, a lot of people do this, they join all these organizations, looks good on a resume. But if you want to participate and you want to get something out of it, you really do have to be a bit involved.
Well, I think someone would need to come out and understand who we are and what we do, spend some time there on a project or with a committee, join a committee. We do need host. We would appreciate it if people would come. And we have a hosting booklet, and any new host, we spend time with that person to help them understand the mechanics of the building, how to turn the air conditioner up, all those practical things, and also to talk about approaching people, talking about our displays. We want people to feel very comfortable when they do host, but we do encourage people who have any interest in hosting that we would very much appreciate their coming out and asking. But I agree that you can't just ask people point blank to do something. You need to ask them for something that they're interested in. They need to be involved to a point where they can understand what we're doing and see where they can fit in. And one thing that we say, we joke, that if it's not fun, we're not going to do it. That's kind of a motto we have. And we do have fun. Last spring, we did 5 luncheons, one a month, to bring people in from out of town, from town, business people and some of the different organization leaders, so that they would understand who we are and what we're doing, so that they can share that with people as they come in town this summer.
Well, when you're relying on volunteers, you have to make it fun, because if it's
yes.
work,
yes,
they
yes.
think, I might as well go to work and get paid for this.
That's right, that's right.
What are your hours? Are you, you're open pretty much daily in the summer and weekends afterwards?
Starting in September, we'll be open on weekends, 10 to 4, Saturday and Sunday. And then we're not open officially January, February, and March. But many of the committees are working there January, February, March. We do have a snow removal contract. We do keep the building at 55 so that we can turn it up. Well, first of all, we want it at 55 for artifacts' sake. Mm-hmm. And then we can turn it up during the day for any committee that's coming into work.
Don't need some vintage snow globe cracking because it got down to 20.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. And you're constantly looking for things. If people have something they think might be of interest to you, they should just contact you folks, because I imagine word of mouth is where you find most of your stuff. I mean, it's not like you can say, oh, yeah, we know where we can find this vintage type of thing, and that was, you know, so much a part of Port Austin.
Well, we're very interested in donations that people might have. Our first priority for a donation is something that comes from Port Austin mm-hmm. and has a story of the person that goes along with it. But secondly, we're interested in things that tells the story of Port Austin, perhaps without a personal attachment. And also we're interested in things that tell the story of the time period. When we do the grindstone house and we set up the kitchen or we set up the living room, it might not be possible for us to have the personal touch from Port Austin, but the time period will be important to us.
You don't have pictures from that era where you can exactly replicate it. You have to go with what was the style of the day and try and make it as authentic as you can mm-hmm. in that regard.
But people can stop by the History Center anytime through August now, or they could call us at 989-551-5532 to discuss any donation they have or to discuss anything that they would like to get information about.
And I assume if you have a group, contact you folks early and you'll make sure there's enough people to help them through?
Yes, we'd be very glad to do that. We had a senior group from Port Hope visit us this summer. We had a Model T group visit us on a Sunday afternoon, so we're very glad to host a group.
You just kept trying to get one of them cars, didn't you?
Or a ride. That would be nice.
You didn't just leave one, you know, as a donation, could you?
Yes.
I'm sure they were, I saw some of them in town, and they were all looking beautiful as they mm-hmm. went through. So, well, I wish you well, and again, you've got the authors the next 3 weekends
yes.
at the
Friday nights at 7 o'clock.
Port Austin History Center. It's just to the east of Port Austin on Point of Barks Road. Just leave town at the main stop intersection now that it is. The light's gone.
Yes.
Thank you, MDOT. And just go east and you will find it.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. We look forward to having more visitors.
Well, I appreciate all your efforts, because if people wouldn't do this, all this history is going to be lost. And the whole community should be grateful people stepped up to do this before it was all gone.
Thank you.
Our guest today on the program has been Martha Thummel, president of the Port Austin Area Historical Society and the Port Austin Area History Center. I do want you to stay tuned. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news.